I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the Aspen Institute and the Stellar Proud and wonderful panel. I'm Laura Liskowitz. I run the Council of Women World Leaders, which is a program that resides at the Aspen Institute. The council is composed of guests. How many women presidents and prime ministers? 35. There are 35 living women presidents and prime ministers who have been president or prime minister. There's diffuse reasons for why women come to power in various countries, Norway to Bangladesh, Liberia, Chile, Germany being the most recent one. But what we know is that when women come to power, potentially things can change. But like, of course, every woman in every leadership position at the top, as we tell people, there really isn't a glass ceiling for women. It's really just a thick layer of men.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm Nora Ephron, and welcome to all of you. And that is the last that we're going to have on the high road. I told everyone to go straight to Hillary if they feel like it. I don't want to waste too much of anyone's time. But I just want to start really fast. I'm a big believer in the words, these people need no introduction, and definitely that means you're not going to get one from me. But we have a great panel. Margaret Carlson, yes or no, is America ready for a woman in the White House? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Susan Collins.
Of course.
Sally Quinn.
Yes.
Arianna Huffington.
You bet.
Nancy Gibbs. Look at that. We can all go home.
That's it.
We need a man up here to disagree.
Yes. Nancy Gibbs, I'm starting with you because you actually came with some statistics. So, over to you.
I have data. It turns out we have more faith in our own open-mindedness than in one another's. When Gallup this winter asked people whether they would be willing to vote for a woman for president, 92% said yes, absolutely. Then when they asked, do you think your neighbors would be willing to? Then it drops to 55%. So the answer to, is America generally ready for a woman? The answer is much lower. Interestingly, more men than women said that they thought that the country was ready for a woman in the White House. 60% of men, 51% of women. Which I thought was surprising. But when they asked what issues they thought that a woman president would handle better than a male president would, the three that came out on top were an issue like a Katrina disaster, healthcare, and education. And I worry that this comes down to cleaning up messes, wiping runny noses, and teaching. You know, like, the polling is kind of mixed about how far we've come. On the other hand, you know, when Chile, which is a conservative Catholic country, can elect an agnostic, twice-divorced, single mother, I think it's almost ridiculous to ask the question about this country. So, but the data is a little more mixed than you might think.
Sal.
Well, when I first heard about this panel, as Nora just said, I thought, you know, we're all going to say yes, and then that's the end of it. What more is there to say? And then I thought it sounded like a really retro question, because I think that Nora, you and I were on this very panel about 35 years ago with the same question. But
fortunately, I have forgotten it. So it's all fresh to me.
When you're talking about can a woman be president, it seems to me what you should talk about is can a qualified woman be president. And I think what that means is can a woman who is clearly the candidate because she's qualified rather than she's just a woman be president. And I remember when Geraldine Ferraro was named to Mondale's ticket and everyone was so ecstatic. And I remember feeling really bad about it because I thought, she is not the right person to be on the ticket, and everybody put her there because they put her there because she was a woman. I didn't think that did anybody any good. But ultimately, I think that one of the problems that people have with a woman being president is the idea of sexuality. And the question, I think, is can a sexual being, a woman who is a really sexual being, be president? If you look at some of the presidents in the past, like or heads of state, Margaret Thatcher, or Indira Gandhi, or Golda Meir, although they were in a parliamentary system, they were all women who were not what you would call sexual. They were not sexual threats. And I think that people are much more comfortable with women who appear to be a sort of neutral. And, I mean, even when you look at, are we ready for a woman Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright and Condi Rice, both attractive women, but they were both single, and they didn't publicly date in any case. So I think that we may be ready for a woman who is a grandmotherly type or someone who is not maybe a crone in the White House. But are we ready for a babe in the White House? That's the question.
Qualified babe
in the White House.
Senator Cole.
Well, we already are going to have our first disagreement on this panel. On the issue of qualified woman, I must say that I take exception to that, starting right out of the box. One of the networks in March, when the president of Chile was elected, did a poll, and here is the question that was asked. Would you support a woman for president if she were qualified? Now think about that. Would you ever have a question asked, would you support a man for president if he were qualified?
Well, actually, many of us think we have an unqualified. So, and I think it was a subject that we did talk about with George Bush in my little blue state.
I cannot imagine a pollster framing that question that way. And the fact that a major network did that says to me that there's still a long ways to go. We obviously are going to talk about Hillary at some point, but the fact is there are many women in America who are qualified to be president. Jane Harmon, my friend Jane, is qualified to be president. There are many Republican women who are qualified to be president. Christy Whitman, in my view, would be a great president. And I think we buy into a biased debate if we frame it that, yes, if the woman is qualified, because we don't talk that way, generally speaking, when we're talking about men.
And so we don't have panels like this either. I mean, this is a panel. This is not
meaning
reality.
What?
No.
Well, some of us who are women and who have actually been elected to public office understand what it is like to run as a woman. But I do want to get to the point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I do want to get to the point of
the very interesting statistic that Nancy gave us about women being less supportive than men, because I think that is a real problem. Lynn Martin once told a wonderful story about women not having confidence in themselves and not supporting other women. And she said, a man who sells Hondas feels that he's an expert in international trade. A woman feels that she has to have a PhD in international economics. And I think there's still, unfortunately, a lot of truth in that statement.
Margaret Carlson, you actually had a column today on Hillary Clinton. I don't want to drag you right to it, but in case.
But go ahead.
Well, I want to thank Sally for introducing sex so quickly. Let me do my part and introduce Hillary.
It's after 9 o'clock.
Exactly. Well, our minds are gone. And thank you, President Collins, for what you had to say. I wrote about Hillary tangentially because she very quickly came out and said that she would not be supporting Senator Lieberman if he ran as an independent in the Connecticut primary, and she did it so quickly when no one else felt that they had to come out and give their opinion on this yet, that it reminded me that so much about Hillary in the present is haunted by the past, and that in discussing can a woman be president, when you discuss can Hillary be president, it brings in all these other things that you have to think about it almost puts aside the question about the woman because it's Hillary. And my theory was that she's still mad about Senator Lieberman going to the Senate floor and calling her husband immoral and has not forgiven him for that. But, you know, Nancy's statistic about the men, I agree with you, women are hard on other women, but I don't believe, I think men were saying perhaps what the pollster wanted to be, wanted to hear. It's like, I'll call you in the morning. I don't think that's really how they feel. The woman who becomes president is going to have to be like the Honda salesman, twice as good as a man. She's going to have to do everything to modify the Ginger Rogers. She's going to have to do everything JFK did, only backwards and in high heels. And that way you get to be considered seriously for president.
Ariana.
Well, let me just first of all say that the question for me has to do with a woman leader. Is a woman a real leader? Because I think at this particular time in our history, different times demand different leaders. Right now, we need a real leader. What do I mean by a real leader? I mean somebody who is willing to be fearless in presenting what they stand for, in taking positions, in standing for their principles, and in uniting the country. And that rules out Hillary. Because Hillary cannot even utter one unequivocal sentence on Iraq. And the reason, Margaret, why she came out so quickly and said that about Lieberman had nothing to do with what he said about her husband. Hillary is so calculating. She's so in the present and the future. It all has to do with the fact that she has completely alienated herself from the grassroots of the Democratic Party on the war. And since the race in Connecticut is all about the war, Ned Lamont is winning in the primary because of his anti-war stance. And with Hillary, you can smell the calculation. And I think the country is sick and tired of calculating politicians, equivocating, triangulating politicians. I mean, Hillary, for heaven's sake, conspired legislation to criminalize flag burning. Do you really seriously believe this is a major issue for her in her heart? Do you know how many incidents of flag burning there were in America last year? 5. In the middle of everything we're dealing with, Iraq, Katrina, so much falling apart, do you think a real leader would waste an ounce of their energy co-sponsoring legislation about something which is so trivial, so insignificant, and nothing more than a conservative issue trying to divide the country? And for me, there is a litmus test in this election. Whether you're a man or a woman, you need to be able to be authentic. You need to be able to stand for what you believe. And we've had enough of the other kind. And whether they are Democrats or Republicans, men, women, metrosexual, heterosexual, actively getting laid, or having had no sex for 20 years, I don't care.
I have a group of women friends that I have lunch with from time to time, and at Christmas we each brought the book that we had liked the most in the last year, and one of them gave me a book called Marie Antoinette by Stefan Zweig, and I recommend it so highly I can't tell you. This friend of mine said this is maybe the greatest book I've ever read, and I sort of felt that, although I have several other books I would add to that category, but what's fascinating about this book is that we all studied the French Revolution in a sort of big way, and we all know that everything swept across Europe in 1848, the French Revolution being one of the things. I had never read the story of the French Revolution from the point of view of Marie Antoinette. She was a mere footnote dancing around with her little shepherdesses and not saying the famous things she was famous for saying. And what I realized as I read this book, which may or may not be true, but is one of the points of the book, was that the French Revolution would never have happened if the French had not had a woman to hate. And I couldn't help thinking about that when I was thinking about this panel, because I do think it is interesting how we can demonize the women who run
for higher office in this country, whatever. And I also think we also have an almost, by the same token, atavistic desire for a cat fight, which is why that idiot who worked for Clinton wrote a book about Condi and Hillary running against
Dick
one
Morris.
Another. It was just Dick Morris, right? And just loved the idea of that. But anyway, I just want to throw that out. If would anyone like to answer this? Do you think we have in America a need to hate a woman?
I don't know if we have personal life. I don't know if it's a question of a need to hate a woman, but in Marla Thomas's famous line, you remember, she said that if you're a man, to be called ruthless, you have to be Joe McCarthy. If you're a woman, you just have to put somebody on hold. So.
I don't believe that. Do you believe that? Well, I believe too many women who put men on hold. Yeah, I do.
There is something about the bar is much lower when it comes to how, what we expect from a woman. It's much easier to call her bitch or bossy or I mean, even words like ambitious. You know, has anybody ever heard Henry Kissinger described as ambitious? You know, it's a word reserved for women. It's a word reserved for women who somehow are trying too hard, because being driven is a trait reserved for men. And if a woman is driven, it's not a good thing. It worries us.
Okay, here's the moment then for the mea culpa, because they actually have done, someone did a study about it for gubernatorial races that looked at the coverage when a man and a woman were running against each other, and about the language that was used and the vocabulary and the emphasis in the coverage. And perhaps it will not shock you to know that the female candidate's personality and personal life got much more attention, and that the male candidate's policy positions got more attention. And when both candidates' positions were being discussed, the male candidate's views were much more likely to be anchored in the evidence and analysis that he brings to bear, as though his positions are a product of his mind and hers of her heart. And so to the extent that there is, I don't think, a conscious effort on the part of our profession or a conspiracy to keep women or to stereotype them, but I read differently now when campaigns are being covered where you have a man and a woman running against each other. And I look for that, and I'm sensitive to it, to see if there are things that we fall into. Is it because we're more interested in certain things about some candidates than others? Or why is that? But to the extent that this has actually been broken down and studied by some wonky professor, this is what that's what they found out.
Nora, I think that the expectations for women are so different. And I think women are caught in this trap where they really can't win, because if a woman is aggressive, then she is perceived as masculine, and people don't like masculine women. But if she's not aggressive, she is perceived as being too feminine, and people don't want someone who's too feminine to be a leader. And so I think women get caught in this really terrible trap of, and you're talking about language and even facial expressions, women are expected to smile more. And if they don't smile, then they are perceived as being angry. Whereas if men smile too much, if they don't smile that much, they're perceived as being serious. And if they smile too much, people will say, what's wrong with him? Why is he always smiling?
But then what do you make of the last Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher, or the current one, Ellen Sirleaf Johnson, of women who, you know, it would be nice if our first female president did not have to have been imprisoned and tortured and go through what some of the current, you know, astounding women who are heads of state right now. But some of the women, I mean, Golda Meir, were known as being, you know, incredibly forceful.
Yes, and the men didn't like it, and they vowed after she left office, never again. They'd had it with her.
So you think?
And also, we're talking. The question I think is: Are we ready for a woman? And so we're not really talking about other countries, because other countries may have different cultural perceptions. But I think that, you know, when you were talking about percentages, There's really like 2% of people will actually admit that they don't think there should be a woman president, but they all lie.
Right. Margaret. As Arianna will remember, Arnold Schwarzenegger brought up the girly men in the Democratic Party. Now, men have to behave a certain way, too, but they have a wider range of behavior that's acceptable than men. I think women have to a narrower range. And to bring this back to a superficial level, I think one of the problems with Hillary is that she doesn't fit into the picture we have of the sort of caring, smiley woman. Hillary's mother said to me in 1991, off the record. This is off the record, right? I would have loved to have written it because I thought it was so perfect. She said, and she said this as a compliment, Hillary's never let her slip show. And that's a problem because American politics, unlike these 35 countries where women have been elected, I think is American Idol. It's not Jeopardy. And you have to be likable. You have to show something about yourself. And yesterday somebody asked me, what do you know about Hillary? You covered her, for 8 years, 10 years. What's her hobby? What does she do in her spare time? Does she like mysteries? The only piece of color, and I think the only piece I've ever put in a piece, is that she carries around a bottle of Tabasco sauce with her. Because she's maybe from the South or nothing's ever spicy enough. But I didn't know that much else about Hillary. I know more about Condi Rice with playing Brahms at the piano and working out at 5 a.m. and bowling with Bush at Camp David. I don't know what she's like in her spare time. I know that in 1992 when I went down to Arkansas, she laughed a lot. She threw back her head and laughed a lot. And I wonder if when she came to Washington, she knew that you weren't supposed to laugh like that, or if Washington took the laugh out of her. But she began behaving in a way that was very much a straitjacket. And to run for mayor, I think you could be like Hillary because you have to know everything. People want you to know how many firemen you have and where the firehouses are and how the policemen and what the zoning is. But when you're running for president, it is more like American Idol, and people have to like the way you are. And I'm not sure people know exactly what they're going to like when they picture a woman president because it's new to us.
But I think it's actually deeper than that because right now, I mean, George Bush, I believe, got elected in the last election because he made the country believe that he would keep us safe. And John Kerry was incapable of making the country feel that he would keep his wife safe, let alone the country. And so right now, I think with Hillary made the decision, again, off the record. She told somebody very close to her campaign who is very much against the war, that she really is against the war, but the reason why she can't say that is because a woman cannot be camp commander-in-chief and be against the war. Now, that is such a fundamental misreading of the country. That is such a fundamental misreading of what it means to be strong as a leader in defending the country, that to think that taking the country into a disastrous war and keeping it there in the middle of a civil war is to be a strong leader in terms of defense, that really, that for me is the fundamental problem. It's really misreading what is happening because you've been so used to calculating everything and because you've been so used to being cautious that in the end you're actually doing exactly the wrong thing. And that, I think, has nothing to do with whether you're a woman or a man. But in a woman, it's even worse somehow because we expect women to operate more from instinct, whether rightly or wrongly. We expect them to somehow care less about losing, take more risks, be bolder. I mean, these things are just simply atavistic. It doesn't mean that women are like that, but we have these expectations because women tend to be more grounded, supposedly more connected with what really matters. And when you have a woman leader who is so disconnected from what she stands for, what she believes, I mean, being endlessly photographed with Bill Frist, Tom DeLay, I mean, she's running out of Republicans to be photographed with, having fundraisers given by Rupert Murdoch, I mean, when she doesn't even need the money, I mean, she can have unlimited money, that's not the problem. When she's as smart as she is, when she's as competent as she is, you feel, you know what, just go off and find who you are, have a life. you know, stop pretending. And I think that's really kind of the longing that you almost want for her. You know, what are you looking for here? What are you hiding? What are you trying to avoid dealing with in running for president? And people may not consciously ask all these questions, but I believe unconsciously they are asking these questions.
But haven't we just proved why Hillary feels the way she does? Listen to this. Listen to the scrutiny of how she feels, how she dresses, whether she laughs the way
did
she used to.
Did anybody say anything about how she dresses?
It's the...
She's reading my mind.
We can talk about it.
But my point is that when you're talking about how calculated and how cautious she is, no wonder. No wonder. And furthermore, I think the challenge for a woman who's running for president is in the national security arena. That's why we had the ABC drama Commander in Chief. It's because it's that role for a woman that for many Americans is still the lead. Women are trusted to do a good job on healthcare, education, and I hate this term, but traditional women's issues. One reason I chose to be on Armed Services and Homeland Security is because I reject the idea that I should only care about healthcare or education. Every issue is a woman's issue. And certainly national security and homeland security are premier issues for all Americans. So I think that Hillary's caution on the war, whether you agree with her or not, is understandable because the biggest barrier for a woman running for president is to prove that she can be commander-in-chief.
So I'm curious about whether you think that Condi Rice's prominence in the premier national security role has lowered that barrier at all for the future, or is she sui generis? Does she matter in that?
She does, but she is unique in many ways. But I do think that, in my view, she's been so effective, so strong as Secretary of State, that it does help pave the way without a doubt. But frankly, it's still different from being Secretary of Defense. There's still a difference.
You know, when Clinton first ran for president, there was a little ad in a little thing in the Village Voice or something from some professor somewhere that if you were dreaming about Hillary, you should write him a thing because he's doing a paper about Hillary dreams. And I realized at that moment that I actually had been dreaming about Hillary. This was in her laughing period, which she did have. She was a much looser human being once upon a time. And before she decided she would never make a mistake, which is something she told me. And I think that she is very much a Rorschach for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. I went to the same college she did. She actually redeemed my having gone to Wellesley, which no one had even heard of in 30 years. And I think we all want her to be us, whoever we may be. I think she attracts that in a way that I'd have never dreamt of Condoleezza, and I never planned to. there are just a lot of women I would not, you know, all your dreams are really about yourself, and
boots, don't you?
Oh, yeah. But you know what I mean, there is something about her. She is somebody that we could have, and by the way, I have always wanted to be First Lady. I was really jealous for never mind being president. Being First Lady is a great job. Yeah. So I do think that she attracts a kind of, among women of, in this cohort, as we call it. Anyone have that?
Of a certain age.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to talk about Hillary without talking about Bill. Because her reaction to what happened with Monica Lewinsky has sort of made her the person that she is today. And we don't know whether she would have gotten elected senator or not if it hadn't been for Monica. We don't know whether people voted for her. What do we think?
I mean, I cannot imagine the Hillary prior to that, the Hillary of healthcare, the Hillary of the headband.
Getting elected.
I mean, no one has ever gained more from sexual favors she did not dispense.
But what I'm saying is, you know, this you can't talk about her, and so I mean, she's, as you said, sui generis. She doesn't fit into any category of any kind of woman politician that we know or ever will know, because nothing like this is ever going to happen again. I mean, she's got Bill. Bill is part of the package. Bill has another life. How does she feel about the other life? If she got elected, what would his life be? The press would be all over him and all over her. And we don't know what she really thinks about it. And you know, if the situation were reversed, if what had happened, if she had been a woman president and had an affair, and he had been the first husband, would he ever be a viable person to be senator or president? The answer, I think, is no. I mean, he would have been viewed as a cuckold, and that would have been the end of it.
Well, I don't know. He's in a buyer's market.
Right.
But, you know, I think what Sally said is really an important point. And in a sense, we got a taste of what this campaign would be like if she did get the nomination in the New York Times Above the Fold 2,000-word article about Bill and Hillary's personal life, which is like an unprecedented piece of journalism in the paper of record, which was like tabloid journalism without the buzz. It was like they had taken, it was all innuendo and code. It was words like Bill Clinton zipping around, I'm not paraphrasing, I'm quoting, zipping around Los Angeles with his bachelor buddy, code for player, skirt chaser, billionaire, Ron Burkle. And it was all on and on like that. And how many, it was also like a kind of mathematical expression of how many nights they had spent together. Had they spent Valentine's Day together? Had they played Scrabble together? What did you give her for a present? It went on and on like that. And you thought, oh my God, is the country ready for the psychodrama again of the Hillary and Bill Clinton marriage? And I say, no, forget about being ready for a woman president. I think we're 1,000% ready for a woman president. But I, for one, and I believe the nation, is not ready for reliving the Clinton marriage. It is their personal life. It is their personal issue. And I don't want to start getting all the photographs of Bill Clinton with all the women he's been with since their marriage came all together again after the Monica Lewinsky affair. And I don't really think that it's fair on the country. And I think it would be a disastrous, self-destructive decision for the Democratic Party of absolutely unprecedented proportion.
And do you think she could get the nomination?
I think the chances are that she will not get the nomination.
All right. Margaret,
you know, I'll give you yes and no in a second, but what I found interesting about that piece was that the staff came up with the 73 nights and days and nights and the Valentine, which led me to believe they think they can handle it, that it's like there's like a war room for the marriage. They're ready for the pieces. They've got it ready. So they think that it's not it's an issue, but not insurmountable, and ready to go forward with that. I hear more and more people. I was just in New York for a couple of days, and that's where, you know, there's the most chatter about Hillary, that she herself will decide not to run because she won't want to go through the psychodrama. Mm. I don't know if that's possible, but some people who know her.
Well, Bill Clinton actually told somebody I know that he was concerned and that he was going to wait until this winter, January, February, March, and if she was not ahead in the polls, ahead of everybody, McCain, everybody else, that he was going to advise her not to run.
Well, she's going to win hugely in New York.
Yeah.
It's going to be monster.
No, I'm talking about the presidential polls.
I know that, but I mean, that's something that has to be factored in, is how she's going to carry upstate New York, and that is going to be
They love her.
But you know what? This is another kind of illusion, which the New Republic did a very good piece exposing, which is the Hillary being beloved in upstate New York. She actually, in her last race, she lost three counties that both Gore and Kerry won, and she did worse than Gore and Kerry won. So the upstate New York is not exactly the red state
they
Ohio.
They can't even get anyone to run against her. And they keep trying to get women to run against her because men are too humiliated to be defeated.
Of course she's going to win big.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
We are talking about a woman being president.
Right.
And not about Hillary Clinton.
Oh, but we are talking about
Hillary.
Who else is running?
I come from the state of California and the Bay Area. We've got three women of significant power. Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, and Barbara Boxer.
But none of them is running for president.
I'd like to talk about the whole issue of a woman as a president, not Hillary Clinton.
I'd like to pick up on that very point because I think Nancy made a very important point that we just let go by. And that is the difference in how the press covers women candidates versus men candidates. And that speaks directly to the point that the woman just raised. Do you remember when Elizabeth Dole briefly ran for president? And I can't tell you how many press stories I read that talked about her pastel suits, one of which described her as looking like a Jordan Almond. You just don't read stories like that when men are running.
Did a woman write the story or a man?
I don't remember. That's a good question.
Although the interesting thing in the case of Lydia Dole was that in that race, she, by whatever measure of resume notches, was the more qualified candidate than George W. Bush. She'd had like five cabinet positions. She had, you know, to go back to what Sally had said about qualification, in that race, personality or appeal or whatever it was that Republican primary voters were responding to, they were responding to the less qualified candidate. So,
but stay with me for a second because I want to give you some other examples with Elizabeth. Elizabeth was criticized as being robotic. Just, you know, always saying the same thing. If you run for political office, you say the same thing. With men, it's staying on message. With women, it's being a robot. There's just so many examples of that. A woman's strident. A man is forceful. A man is thoughtful. A woman's wishy-washy. Doesn't really know where she stands. I think that until the press starts covering men and women more equally, it's going to be hard for a woman to become president.
This poll that Nancy read does not suggest to me that you can blame the press.
Yeah.
I was just saying that these polls don't suggest that you can blame the press. Apparently people are ready to vote for a woman for president, and men are more likely than women. Why do women have more of a problem with it?
Well, let me just say, when I talked about qualified women, what I think is that the idea of going out and looking for a woman is patronizing. I mean, I think I'm just talking about, you look at the best candidates and you say, this one is the most qualified, whether it's a woman or a man. And not, this is a woman, therefore we should elevate her. And one of the problems we have is that we have over 50% of the country is women, and yet the pool from which we have to choose is not 50%. I mean, we probably maybe 15% of the people who are in office, who are Senate and Congress and state
That's
legislatures
exactly right.
and all of that are women, and the rest of them are men. And so when you have a smaller pool, then you're going to have a smaller number of qualified candidates. And I mean, Nora's right. I mean, there are an awful lot of people who think that George Bush was not qualified, and certainly if on paper he was much less qualified than so many other people who were running for office. then you also have the issue of authenticity. I mean, one of the things about George Bush that appealed to people is that he was who he was. And I think clarity is really a key issue, that people present themselves and they say what they think and what they mean. And I mean, Ronald Reagan was a good example, and George Bush too, of people who may be perceived as simple, but they have a message and they know who they are and they stand for something, and people really respond to that. The problem with, as Ariana points out about Hillary, is that a lot of people don't know what she stands for, who she really is. But you could say the same thing about John Kerry, and certainly about Al Gore, who probably lost because he listened to his political consultants and he forgot who he was. And now you all see that movie, An Inconvenient Truth. You see who Al Gore is. And a friend of mine said when he saw the movie, where was that SOB 8 years ago? I mean, I think that's one of the issues about women, too, is that women need to be as clear as men, but I don't think it's men versus women in that particular sense.
But when Geraldine Ferraro was nominated in that sort of glorious gray-haired moment, and we all knew her from New York. We knew she was not whatever. But it was emotionally amazing as a moment for women, that first moment before that all fell apart. And I do think that whoever that candidate is, Democrat or Republican, whoever the first one is, it's going to be surprisingly emotional for those of us who say, oh, all we care about is who's more qualified. I do think there will be some of that working, because it's going to be an amazing moment when it happens.
But I think when we say qualified, I don't think we mean qualified in terms of PhDs or in terms of how many cabinet positions they had held. I think we mean qualified in a more fundamental sense. Qualified to lead this country at a moment of immense
crisis.
So who's
your candidate?
Well, you know, there is no woman at the moment.
No, but who's great Democratic leader? I'd love to know.
I think clearly there are people in the audience who want us to stick to the subject, Nora, and if we move now to discuss candidates generally rather than women.
I'm just saying the Democrats are not giving us a whole lot in the authenticity
department. No, but certainly for me, I mean, I would say that if let me just say one more thing before I tell you who I would like to see running at the moment. I just think that the job of the president is a mythical job. It's a job where we, as you said, we project our own kind of longings. It's a job driven by our archetypes. It's a huge job in terms of our own psyches. And I think this country is tired, sick and tired of the John Wayne archetype that George Bush epitomizes, and in some ways Reagan in a less destructive way embodied. So they're sick of that. So in a way, a woman president embodying a very different archetype, an archetype of a strong warrior leader, because I agree with you, national security is going to remain in a post-9/11 reality the key issue, but also being empathetic, nurturing. A woman who, if Katrina, God forbid, happens again, will not immediately tell us that he is very much looking forward to rebuilding Trent Lott's house, for example, not being the highest priority for an empathetic leader. So all that would actually mean that a woman would have a great, great advantage going forward. Just there is no such woman in the running at the moment. So in the absence of that, I would like to see a man who has suffered, who has lost greatly, and who has learned to put away consultants and focus groups and be authentic and be a leader. And that's why I very much hope that Al Gore is going to run. And I was not an Al Gore fan in 2000. Anybody who wants to LexisNexis what I wrote about him will realize that this is simply my belief in redemption and my belief that people can actually come to a point where they're not as afraid of losing. I mean, his concession speech when he actually gave the presidency, decided to give the presidency to George Bush after the Supreme Court decision, was the best speech he gave during the campaign. So I think maybe in the next election cycle, presidential candidates can start with their concession speech. And
I
just want to give you a fact.
We'll take questions, by the way.
In 1905, Susan B. Anthony said, one day there will be a woman president. And who could have imagined that it would have been 100 years later and we still don't have a woman president?
Yeah, but we didn't have a vote in 1905.
Well, I know, but I'm...
we don't have to get the vote.
Yeah.
But,
I found this conversation to be extraordinary. And here you have all these incredibly thoughtful women trashing the one woman who has a chance to be a president, who is actually, in my opinion, a very decent person, who is served with distinction in the Senate. Her colleagues in the Senate, by and large, I think she's a hard worker. She works in a bipartisan way. And the fact that she's calculating and triangulating, so is her husband. If her husband ran today, he'd win in a landslide because he has exactly the right kind of mix of softness and hardness and intellectual capacity, and he had a great economy going for him, and he'd win in a landslide. Nobody cares about the fact that he looked at the polls every 2 seconds, but it was because he was a man. Women should have that right, too. And I think it's just stunning to me that the reason there is no woman president is because every time one rises up, who has a shot, people like yourselves take a shot.
Who in the past have we all taken a shot at? Every time a candidate like that rises up, who are we talking about?
Well,
No, you're not talking about
now that one has risen up and truly has the quality that could be president.
Yes, she could. She absolutely could. She's a star. She has a husband star. She's a good senator, blah, blah. But I promise you I was disappointed in her husband, too, and his triangulation.
Well, okay.
It's not something we only apply to women. You know, it's not something that I think is only applied to women. We're just talking about women.
But Nora, there's one other thing. It's like one woman, you know, one woman stands for all women. It's like when one woman fails, we're not going to do that again. How long has it been since Geraldine Ferraro was the vice president? Is it 30 years?
72.
84. Okay, someone do the math. But
right.
It's been a long time. Oh it's been a long
22.
Time.
22. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Jane.
Well, first of all, if you want to get anything done in Congress, work with Susan Collins. Second of all, I just want to say when I gave my first speech as a baby congressperson on the floor of the House for 1 minute, and it's covered live on C-SPAN, I called back to my office and said, and of course it was a brilliant speech, did anyone call in from the district? Oh, yes, first caller was a male. Well, what did he say? What did he say? Just tell Jane I loved her outfit. My point is that there are many women now in Congress and in state legislatures, and it is not unusual to see women chairing committees or being ranking members on committees. And some of us, I think most of us, don't even notice anymore. I'm serious. In the legislative arena, I think Laura would agree with this, the glass ceiling has fallen, more or less. There still needs to be a woman speaker and leader. But at any rate, for executive office, it's different. At least above mayor. It's very hard for women to be elected governor, and obviously, so far, impossible for women to be elected president. And so my question for the panel really is, what is the difference? Why legislative office fine and executive office not fine?
Having run for governor and gotten my clock cleaned, and having successfully run for senator twice, I think what you've said is exactly right. There's much more of a glass ceiling for executive positions. I would argue even to be mayor. I think mayor, governor, and president. And I've thought a lot about why that is. And I think it parallels the corporate world. And I think as you see more and more women becoming CEOs that it will help pave the way for women in executive positions in politics. I also think that women are perceived as being people who are able to work toward a consensus, which is in turn more of a legislative function, whereas an executive function, and we know good executives seek consensus too, but executive positions are seen as more command and control positions. And I think those qualities in our society are still associated more with males.
The female boss.
Yes, it's been 100 years since Susan Collins.
it really wasn't quite that long. I was 12
Susan
years when I did my first
said
trip.
One day there would be a woman president. But and it's slower than I would have imagined. But when you look at the number of women who are in the Congress and the Senate and the CEOs and the Episcopal Church has just elected their first presiding bishop as a woman, women are gradually beginning to rise up. I really believe that we are, at some point we are going to go back to where we were thousands and thousands of years ago, where women were the mother and the goddess, and that women are going to run the world one day. I actually believe that, and I think it's going to be sooner. I'm sorry, guys. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. And I think if you just watch what's happening, I mean, look at the women. Look at Nora could be president.
Oh, right.
Have you ever
could
seen
really
Nora?
Really be first lady, and it's tragic.
No, have you ever seen Nora on the set?
I just want to agree with Sally on that. And I just spent a year studying women because I've just finished a book called On Becoming Fearless, specifically about women and fearlessness. And what is it that stops us from being fearless? And what are the specific issues that we are dealing with? I have two teenage daughters, which is what prompted the book. And I see that when women are fearless, when women get in touch with that power that we have, it is really kind of unstoppable. And you see it, I studied it through all sorts of walks of life, historical periods, corporations, journalism, acting. So there is something there. And that's why when that potential is not kind of used and activated, that's why it's sadder. That's why somehow we all get more upset about it than we get when there are sort of hundreds of men who are like run of the mill and don't rise to the challenge of the times.
Yes, in the back.
Me?
Yes.
No. Oh, okay. My name is Kat Jaffe, and I go to Wellesley right now. I'm very happy to see you there. And this last semester I studied gender and world politics. And when I get a chance, I sit in on tutorials. And recently, David Gergen spoke about how some of the most recent presidents haven't been effective because they haven't had war in their past, a war experience. With lack of the draft in the United States, and even in studying in Giragondi's own experience and a lot of female presidents and leaders not having that war experience, are they at a disadvantage in dealing with other presidents or leaders of, I hate to say, a belligerent state that do have more of a warfaring policy? And particularly in looking at Indira's life, she stated that a lot of the social norms, because she couldn't go in and have dinner with another leader by herself because that was looked upon poorly. In a lot of these situations, just because of society, just didn't work. How do you see that for us? And do you think that would come as a disadvantage to a woman because we do not fight because of society?
Well, we have a president and a vice president who have never been to war.
Look at all the war wimps.
Well, I mean, there are very few even in the Senate.
There's nobody left.
So it's at least in our country, it's not going to be an issue whether you're a man or a woman, at least in the leadership class that's current now. We have Hagel and McCain in the Senate, and Kerry.
The Swift
voted Kerry.
Yeah, Martha, look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm Sidney Harmon, and because I believe I'm the only husband whose wife has been nominated for the presidency here tonight, I want to put a question to the panel about an alternative candidate. Should this lady, who not one time in my recollection in her service in the Congress ever suggested to me that she was responding to an issue as a female. Never once have I heard that. In the remote possibility that she would decline the nomination, I have an alternative for your consideration. It is 60 years since this lady was in our consciousness, and I'm about to name her, but to ask you if you think she might be elected today, what that says to us about the readiness of the country to elect a woman. And her name was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Well, you know, when I first saw the name of the panel of Are We Ready for a Woman in a White House, in the White House, my first response was, we've had them for 230 years. And it's a fascinating question about how we would respond to not just Eleanor Roosevelt, but some of the extraordinary women who were in the unique position that she was of being as close to power. And I think, you know, maybe it's just one of these cosmic ironies that we've spent so much time talking about Hillary, whose entry into national public life was as first ladies, as the one pipeline. Do I think Eleanor Roosevelt could get elected today? You know, the problem with this whole discussion, I think what's frustrating, I'm sure, for you and for all of us, is that we've been having to have it so much in the abstract, and just asking, are we ready for a woman, is a meaningless question. Which woman? any more than are we ready for a man? And so, in a way, it's fun to go back into history and think about women who were role models, were exemplars, were pioneers in their field, and try to populate our political stage with them now. It's a great fantasy. Of course, it's an unanswerable question, but I like to think, sure, Eleanor Roosevelt would be a phenomenal force.
Well, but interestingly, yeah, many of the things that are said against Hillary, like her high negatives, were true of Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. You know, so, which is not to say I don't like Eleanor Roosevelt as a candidate. I'm with you on that. I'm just saying it's interesting that plus ça change.
But if we are persuaded that Eleanor Roosevelt could be elected, then it seems to me we're obliged to answer the question, a woman can be elected president in this country.
We all believe that.
Yeah. I don't think anybody says that.
Right. Yes.
You know, I would vote for a woman president.
Louder.
I would vote for a woman president. I would vote for a male president. I think there's a paucity of good candidates, and I think that we just don't have anyone that's particularly compelling at this time. I really think that's what the problem is here. I don't think it's that we were trashing Hillary.
Yes.
I think it's... Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
why don't you stand?
I said that I would vote for a woman president, and I would vote for a woman president tomorrow. I would vote for a male president. But I think that there's a paucity of good candidates, and I think that in both parties, and I think that's the problem. We don't have a lot of compelling candidates on the horizon. And I think that's, I don't think we were trashing, or you were trashing, I should say, Hillary. I just think that many of you don't feel that she's qualified. And I'm inclined to agree with that opinion, incidentally.
I don't know that people were saying that she wasn't qualified.
No, I think she's qualified.
But no, I think some people were saying, I think some people think, one of the things they think about her is that she can't win. She shouldn't run because she can't win, which is not, which, by the way, she probably can win. I read your article, Carl Cannon. She can win. And what are we talking about? We're talking about Ohio. But, yes, right there.
I'd like to amplify that last comment. It seems to me if you're looking for who can be president, you think about, what do you want your president to be? You know, do you want your president to be an excellent administrator? Do you want your president to be an excellent politician? Or do you want your president to be a leader? And I think that's the fundamental question here. And I think the issue is that you're looking for a woman who is a leader, mm-hmm. not someone who wants to be a leader, but who can be a leader. Mm-hmm. And I think there has to be an opportunity for a woman to come to the front and actually demonstrate that she is a leader. And I think that's what we're missing. And you're searching for a candidate. And what are you searching for? You're searching for someone who is a leader, mm-hmm. not wants to be a leader. And I think that's the thing that George Bush seemed like to the American people, and probably Reagan seemed like to the American people.
Yes.
To amplify what you just said, I agree with you, and I think that there was on Chris Matthews' Hardball the other day, a Republican strategist who said that he was most worried for someone that was similar to Bill Clinton as for someone for the Democrats, because like Mark Warner or someone like that, because he felt that someone who was dynamic, a leader, and that was what they were worried about. And I think in your comments on Hillary Clinton, I think she's done all the right things, like, you know, being like pro-war for her, not my personal views, but for being on all the committees for all the defense things, similar to what you had said, what you've done, to show strength. I think that's all really important. And I think if she didn't do that, I think she would be totally trashed. And so she's stuck kind of in a catch-22. I think she can't win with that. And it's really too bad, because whatever she does either way, she gets trashed. And by the left or by the right, it seems like. And so I think that it's hard in her situation, because I think myself, the Clintons, if they actually got elected, I think they could probably be a really dynamic duel in the White House. And I think they'd probably get a lot done, and hopefully, you know, it would be a favorable thing. And because right now the country's so divided that it's, you know, it's really sad to me to see the country this divided.
Do you believe that there's some difference between women in power from men, as the White House project and various things of that sort believe?
Did you hear what, I don't know how many of you were at the thing this afternoon with Sandra O'Connor and Stephen Breyer, and Sandra O'Connor was talking about having had a conversation with Ruth Ginsburg, and how they both agreed that in the end their decisions were not made any differently because they were women. I thought that was interesting.
Anyone else want to comment on that?
Well, I mean, as Sally said, women are goddesses, and as such, they're much broader in how they think. But I don't think, in essentially, you know, in your day-to-day work in the Senate, you don't come down differently because you're a woman on Homeland Security. I mean, I see you and Joe Lieberman, everybody sitting there. It's the same thought process. The same things matter. If anything, you're more decisive and more candid.
In the back, right there.
I think this answers the question. I don't feel we can elect a woman. And the reason I don't think we can is because I don't think we're ready to acknowledge that a woman can be a president and a leader who's just plain smart. You know, we're talking about a woman who's a senator, who's been in a difficult situation in the White House before in a different role. But she's brilliant. And she actually can talk to anybody in the world. And at an intellectual level, she's incredibly well-read. She knows how to discuss all the issues. I mean, at this point, after 8 years, we need somebody who's really smart, who actually understands the issues.
I don't think a man who's just smart can win. But, Nora, I don't think a man who's just smart can be president.
But also I think there's another difference, the difference between being smart and being wise. What this country is lacking right now is wisdom. What we're lacking is judgment. I don't think we're lacking perhaps smarts in the sense of well-read and brilliant in our commander-in-chief, but there are plenty of smart people in the cabinet, and that's not the problem. The problem is lack of wisdom, and that's really what we're looking for in our leader. You know, especially in times of crisis, you know, we have to realize that there are plateau times. There are times when things are just going along. The 90s were such a time when basically, you know, the president had to preside over a booming economy, and the decisions are different. The stakes are not as high. The stakes at the moment could not be higher. So that's why we're all so concerned about who is elected in 2008. And that's why we are all longing for someone who will be a real leader.
I called on someone a minute ago, but have you gotten cold feet? Yes. Right there. Yeah.
I just wanted to reiterate what Ms. Norman said, but I have to admit that I was one of the first people on Hillary Clinton's campaign finance committee in her first run. But the reactions that I've heard from the women up front are very similar to reactions I got from women in New York, colleagues of mine at Ivy League schools who are prominent business women in New York City and outside the city, who were very negative about Hillary, but not because of any policy she stood for or her background or her experience, but it was because of how she dealt with her husband when he was unfaithful, about the marriage, about her hairstyle, about her slip. And what I think is important is I don't think you can elect a woman as president until the women in this country are going to judge women on their qualifications.
Right.
Yeah. Hillary's record as a senator in New York, or what she stood for, or how she, what she was professionally as a senator. You talked about what you liked about her, and those things are fair, but not to judge her as a president.
But you know, you could say exactly the same thing about Al Gore when Al Gore was running. Remember Earth Tones?
Yes.
And who he was, and his hair, and his mannerisms. And
that was the press. This is women. Women are saying this.
Well, no, but I mean, women and men were saying that about Al Gore, and women and men are saying this, making the same judgments and having the same perceptions about Hillary that they did about Al Gore.
But isn't this sort of like criticizing people who are against the war? Saying, well, I mean, because one finds fault in Hillary doesn't mean we can't elect a woman president, or that many of us won't vote for Hillary. I'll vote for any Democrat in the next election.
I'm shocked.
But it must be possible to criticize her without being...
But I think women have a history of not helping other women.
That's right.
Yes, and yet we should not take, you know, it's not any port in the storm either.
Well,
you know, because there, but Ariana is criticizing Hillary because of her position on the war.
But I don't even think she got her position on the war correct.
I didn't get her position on the war correct. I mean, her position on the war has been very clear, which is that we can't have an exit strategy, that basically her position on the war is almost indistinguishable from George Bush's, except that she also says that George Bush has wants us there to stay there indeterminately, and she says she wants to stay there until the Iraqis are ready to fight for themselves. Her position in the war, on the war, is a nightmare of confusion, equivocation, and poll testing. And at this stage, having been through the 2004 campaign with John Kerry, who voted for it before he voted against it, you know, we are not ready for that anymore. And that's really the point. And it doesn't matter if she's a woman or a man, you know, honestly. All that matters right now is to be clear about what you believe on the most important issue of our time. And when somebody said here that, well, you know, she's a woman and she has to take a strong position, do you realize what that means? It means that you think that in order to be elected president, if you're a woman, you cannot say what you really believe on a matter of life and death. That is a disqualification, if I've ever heard any. The most important decision a president can make is who to send to war and when. And if a woman is going to be guided by questions of gender in making that decision, that is really the most ludicrous and demeaning thing you can say about a woman candidate.
Yes.
What do you think the difference is between the United States and the UK, Israel, Germany, and other countries that have women in top leadership roles?
This is a This is why I think it in every case it comes. It's so specific to the candidate, specific to the country. You know, I lived in England when Margaret Thatcher was prime minister. I grant you that a parliamentary system is a very different. That a lot of women who have in other countries who have come to power have come by dynastic means through a parliamentary system, through an ascent that is very different than the way one ascends to the presidency here. But I think that the example of other countries, whether it's Great Britain then or Germany or Chile or Liberia now, is that it what matters, and I think this is heartening, I think this is what should matter. What matters is not the gender. What matters is the right person with the right principles and policies for that moment. And I think we should be heartened when so many countries have answered the question that we're asking. It should certainly, I think, indicate that when the public at large, when enough a majority of people believe that the right candidate has arrived, that gender will be irrelevant.
One more question right there.
I was awed by the other day we had Bob Schaefer and Kate Kirk up and spoke to us. I'm listening to everybody here, and I'm wondering, how did Kate Kirk get to where she is? If you think about some of the qualifications you've been talking about, she's somebody who's attractive, smart, authentic, kind. She is somebody that every time I'm listening, I'm going, okay, it is happening in our country. There are women out there, someone like her, who, I mean, she was on every cover of every magazine, but not in a derogatory way. The way we're speaking about Hillary, I want to just raise this to the panel and hear what you have to say. What is it about her that is so powerful that we look at her and admire her?
Could
we capture that in a candidate for president?
Margaret.
I was just thinking, I can't explain Katie Couric's rise to all the covers of the magazine and the CBS anchor. I don't have an answer for that one. I think it's an entirely different process. Nora, you would know. You're in Hollywood.
No, I mean, I don't. I think it's easy to look at Katie, who's completely hilariously and smart, unbelievably 8 or 9 times smarter than most people even know, I think, and not just adore her, but we have no idea. I mean, are you talking about her as president?
No, I'm saying that there's some. I'm listening to you. I'm listening to each one of you, and you're all raising great points. But at each one of you, the things that you've raised, she has some of those qualities. Now she's not elected. But
well, we don't know what she stands for.
Well, she's very. Wait a minute. This is a woman that's.
I mean, I love to talk. We all love to cast the president. It's one of our favorite games in L.A. And casting is a very interesting criterion when you look at candidates and you, from my point of view, and you just think, which one do you cast as the guy who gets the girl and which one gets left at the altar? And by the way, in any other, it's impossible to conceive that George Bush doesn't get left at the altar. He just happened to run against guys who were more unimaginable as leading men. So I love this game, and we love to talk about how Tom Hanks could be president. And it would be great, because we'd all follow him anywhere, right? And he'd win. And he's a Democrat. But we have no idea. It's just a little dream. It's just a little party game.
Well, not, what about Tom Brokaw? Have you given
Tom
him
Brokaw,
up?
Tom Brokaw, absolutely. Wouldn't that be a great candidate? Unfortunately, he doesn't want to run. Okay, last question.
I think it's great that we can be evaluative and critical and be open, but I think we also have to be realistic and deal with the hand we've got, you know? And Hillary is a possibility, and she may not be great, and she may not show her slip, and she certainly got into trouble when she was too strong, with health care, and she got into trouble with her cookies, She's trying the best she can. I think we can find fault in everybody. There is nobody great out there. But given the hand we're dealt, it's interesting that we're not being more supportive after criticizing and saying this is a real possibility. And how come we're not being more realistic? And with John McCain, he's got a lot of Democrats voting for him. Yes, he's very authentic. He has a lot of principle. We know where he stands on. But lately, he's been courting the conservatives so much. But we still say, well, you know, that's politics. And we're pretty forgiving. Not everybody, but there's still a margin of forgiveness there. And with Hillary, she's such a lightning rod. What are we projecting? What mirror is she holding up to us that we're projecting so much of our own stuff about? Mm-hmm. Is she too perfect? No, she's not perfect enough. Is she too straight? She's not loose enough. And let's get real here. We've got an opportunity to get behind somebody who's looking to find a way.
People,
well, if
people
we were talking
really
about John McCain,
I mean, everybody's turned against him.
You know, some of the same things that would have come up. And other than President Collins here, we're sort of journalists. So we talk about we don't write about the dog that didn't get run over. I mean, we're you know, it's not in our nature. So we could go through the male candidates if we had another hour and it wasn't 1:30 a.m. my time.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. I knew it first, sir.